seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Now then, welcome along, Golf Weekly listeners. It's getting busy. The Masters almost here. We have much to discuss. Peter Lawrie's here in the studio. Hello.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Very well. Fionn Davenport was meant to be with us, but he has been struck down. Emergency trip to the doctor for Fionn. All is well. Nothing too serious, but he's not going to make it. And Nathan Murphy is caught in a brainstorming meeting. The producers are offside coming up with weird and wonderful ideas.
Wow. Well, we normally have our meetings in here, live on podcast.
So we said, look, let's plough on, just the two of us. There's still plenty to discuss. I'm going to start with tweets and then we'll get into some good stuff. So Len Dowling says, you'll like this. He went to Spawell last night to give Top Tracer a go. Great fun. Great chat afterwards with the boss. Hashtag friend of the pod. Top Tracer is in at Spawell and going well.
Yes, coming on nicely. Yes, lots of people are interested, so it's great.
Hmm. Did I see Gary Murphy's now an instructor there as well?
He is indeed. So we've really got a top team now. Hmm. Gary came on board last week. And is kind of just finding his feet there. He was in teaching out of Rogenstown, and he does a little bit there as well, and quite a bit now in Spawell.
So look, not every former European Tour player can be a great coach, but some can.
Some can be better than others, thanks, Joe. Yeah.
Len Daly also says a great shout on the Elkington No Laying Up podcast as well, by the way. Did you listen to that by any chance?
Yes, very good.
There are some thoughts from the listeners on Elkington. Okay. We'll get to those in a second. John Tierney, on honeymoon. Finally getting around to the Slaying the Tiger book from Shane Ryan. Nice start to his honeymoon in South Africa. He got an upgrade as well. Hashtag friend of the pod. Hashtag honeymoon. Kieran Branigan. Hey lads, what about the Coochin Garcia nice guy video? Hashtag cringe. Yeah, it's been a bad couple of months for those two.
Terrible. Garcia in his little, he threw the toys out of the pram in Saudi Arabia, didn't he?
Big way, yeah. Got disqualified.
Got disqualified, should have got fined, should have got banned, didn't, none of that. European Tour wouldn't stand up. Mm. And then he comes and plays in the match play, and they, Matt Kuchar, following up his debacle in Mexico, makes another town halls of it in the match play.
Is that your read on it, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Like, how can you do that? Like, when somebody, he had a shortish putt for a win, didn't he? And then he picked it up. But like, come on, it happened to me a long time ago on match play, and you could be a little bit annoyed by, your partner or your opposition picking up their ball, but like, it was so short, it was gimme distance,
It was, yeah. Well, let's deal with that now then. We might play the video in a second. In short, Kuchar and Garcia, they're playing away. And as you said, Garcia misses the putt, but then just almost tries to back putt it. It was that close.
Yeah.
Makes a mess of it. That's totally on him. That's silly. And then when they get to the next tee, Kuchar, he almost says, hey, look, I didn't actually concede that putt, so I'm not sure where that leaves us with the rules officials. And you just wonder if he needed to bring that up at all. Like, just say nothing. Just imply, yeah, I conceded it. It was obvious. That's what he called the rule official over to say, Sergio missed the putt. I never actually conceded it. Is that okay? He asks, I suspect, knowing the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's a sad situation, and it's a sad, like, he won by one hole in the end. Do we feel sorry for either of them? Absolutely not. Are they the two people that you'd probably like to see something like this happen to? So be it, Mm. Both of them, as I said to you, have behaved terribly. Mm. And really, it's bad for golf. It just leaves a bad taste in people's mouths.
Kuchar said, and we'll play the video in a second, but he said, I saw he missed his second putt. I said, Sergio, I didn't say anything. I'm not sure how this works out, Kuchar revealed. I think he must know what will happen if he calls a rules official over. I didn't want it to be an issue.
But it is an issue.
So I asked the rules official, Robbie Ware, over. I said, I don't know how to handle this, but I didn't concede the putt. And Sergio missed. Now, interestingly, and Kuchar, as you'll hear in this video, has backtracked on this. But Kuchar says, Sergio said, you could concede a hole. I said, I'm not sure I'm ready to concede a hole. In Kuchar's initial statement, he said that Sergio said to him, well, if you feel so bad about it, just concede this next hole.
Concede the next hole, yeah. And make it right.
And Kuchar said, well, I'm not sure I'm ready to quite concede the hole. So I don't know what the etiquette is there.
Well, the etiquette, in my mind, the etiquette would have been, they get onto the next tee box, and Matt says to Sergio, by the way, I give you the putts so you can wait until I give them to you. Mm-hmm. But we're okay, you know, and move on.
Okay.
That's what I would have done.
Kuchar almost seems to be suggesting he felt that he might in some way be in trouble with the rules official afterwards.
That's a load of baloney.
Yeah, I would have thought so too.
Absolutely load of baloney.
Even as particular as golf is, they wouldn't have followed up in that moment.
Not a chance. But I think under the letter of the law of match play,
yeah,
if there is an infringement, okay, of the rules, and you don't claim the hole. Now, I can be told, I can be wrong here, all right? So I'm just stating the fact, but this is what I think it is. Mm-hmm. That if you don't claim the hole because I've made a mistake, I can actually claim the hole because you haven't enforced the rule.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So maybe that was on Kuchar's mind.
No, I would agree that he comes across as this lovely person, but he's certainly not portraying that way, you know, when he gets the opportunity. Mm. He had the opportunity to make things right with the caddy in Mexico. He didn't until the very last second. And then he made a fool of himself. And both of them have made a fool of themselves in their little video.
Sergio Garcia, Matt Kuchar. We're day after, Monday after the World Golf Championship match play. We're out at Austin Golf Club.
Beautiful day.
And we've just been going over what's gone on between our match and the aftermath. And what's gone on with the aftermath is just incorrect, wrong, shouldn't happen. I want to tell you, Sergio handled the thing extremely well. When he missed the putt, we came off seven. And he said, I know it, I missed it. It's your hole. I told him how bad I felt. Didn't feel right at all. Never want to win on a technicality. Tee off eight. And I said, man, I really don't like how this has played out. And Sergio offered a suggestion, but never said to give me a hole. Gave me an option or two of how to play it out. But want everybody to know, Sergio handled it, understood it was a loss of hole, and said, I get it.
Yeah, obviously I know I made a mistake on seven, and you know, didn't give him time to say that's good, or even though obviously, you know, we all kind of in our minds thought it was good because it was a short putt. But you know, at the end of the day, I think that you know, I made a mistake. He unfortunately didn't know how to make up for what happened, and you know, it's all good. We're all good, and you know, just
no shade needs to be thrown in that direction at all. He came up straight away, said, I know I messed that one up, and we continued our battle from there.
And it was a great match after all, and he played better than me and beat me, so it's as simple as that.
There's something disingenuous about Kuchar. I feel really bad. I don't want to win this way. And then he says in that video that Sergio did not say, well, concede the hole. But he does say that Sergio came up with a few suggestions about how to rectify the situation. Like, if Kuchar genuinely felt so bad that he wanted to rectify what had happened, there are so many avenues.
Of course there is.
He could think of about five or six ways to make it right. I would much prefer if Kuchar came out and just said, you know what, the truth is, I won the hole. That's on him. There's this sense with him that he's saying, I didn't know, there was nothing I could do, my hands were tied.
Yeah, but does he come across this as is he trying to come across as this kind of silly person, you know what I mean? That you know, he doesn't have a brain in his head, that he can't...
He couldn't figure out what to do.
Yeah. There's so many things he could have done, right? I don't know, it's a PR disaster, to be honest with you. It's a bit like a...
it's not a disaster.
Well, it is for both of them, really, because they make them fools of each other. And then, like, who put the video out? That's what I'd question. Like, you know, where did it come from? Is it a bit like Dustin Johnson and Brooks after the Ryder Cup?
Best friends.
Oh, we're best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing has changed, even though we boxed the head off each other.
Well, I think the mask slips there when you listen to Sergio and he's saying, look, unfortunately, you know, I made a few suggestions or whatever, but Matt couldn't really, you know, didn't really seem to know what the best way to handle it was. And it was a very short putt, Sergio can't help but say again.
Yeah.
There is just something slightly disingenuous here about Kuchar trying to have it both ways. I felt so bad. I felt terrible. I didn't want to win this way.
Correct it. Yeah, that's, simple as that.
That is the logical conclusion to trying to play that card.
Well, why didn't his caddy, like, surely, you know, I mean, there was four guys out there, okay? And if Matt had the only one that had the thing, I don't know what to do, you know, surely the others could come up with an idea that would solve it.
I suspect Sergio did say to him, you can concede the hole, because that's what Kuchar said initially. And he's backtracked on that now. But I would say that was one of the options Sergio gave him. Like, just concede the next hole, we're back to all square, we still have 7-8 holes to play, it's fine.
Yeah.
But Kuchar didn't want to do that. So he felt bad about it.
Win at all costs.
Totally.
And you know what? Win at all costs.
If Kuchar had come out and said it, look, he made a mess of things, it was his mistake. Obviously it's not ideal, I don't want to win that way, but I'm perfectly comfortable taking advantage of his cock-up and I'm here to win. It's only a game of golf, at the end of the day, I'm here to win. You'd almost have a bit more respect for him. But he's trying to have it both ways. I felt terrible. Like, I felt really bad. Really, really bad.
Karma, that's all I can say. Mm. You know, he lost in the final. If he'd won the final, then you would have said. Anyway, Kevin Kistner, well done.
In the pro ranks, say you've lagged up a putt to millimetres.
Yeah.
And say your opponent says nothing, but just starts walking to the next tee.
Yeah, you'd still tap it in.
Okay, so say it's a 2-footer or 3-footer, and your opponent walked off as if to say, that's good. But never actually said that's good. Would you make a point of calling him back and saying, is that good? Or would you almost, like in the real world, would you almost say, that's a tacit admission that it's good by him just walking off like that?
Yeah, I'd probably take it as an admission it was okay by him walking off. Yeah, absolutely.
And would you be livid then if you got to the tee box, say you missed it, and he said, I never said anything?
Oh yeah, I'd say, look, if that's the way you want to win, good luck to you. I'm out of here. Mm. But it's ingrained in a professional golfer to finish out. No matter what happens.
Okay.
You know, it's ingrained that we put the ball in the hole.
Mm.
And it's unusual that we just pick it up.
Okay.
So it's difficult to pick up your golf ball.
Okay.
Yeah, I find it. You know, I would find it difficult to pick up a golf ball.
And say you're a 4-footer, 3 to 4-footer. Would you look over at your opponent, hopefully?
Not a chance, no.
Never?
Never.
So it would be very much against the etiquette for you over your 2 or 3 or 4-footer to look up at the opponent and say, is that good? You would never ask.
No, because you're as I said to you, you're so ingrained in wanting to finish out. Because, whatever, 98% of your tournaments are stroke play.
Yeah.
So you're so used to finishing out. So.
Okay. Roisin, greater than winning a trip to the Heineken Champions Cup final on the Roadshow, the Heineken Roadshow live show this week. I got a shout out from Atten Lloyd Joe on Golf Weekly, friend of the pod. Listen. No bigger honour than getting a shout out on this
Absolute
podcast.
Absolutely, Joe. You are a hero.
I really am. John, Kelly, lads, when you get a chance, can we discuss who's the bigger moron, Sergio or Kuchar? Who's more at fault here?
Kuchar, for sure. Absolutely. Okay. 100%.
Okay. Duke says, I listen to Elkington. To be honest, just sound like a bollocks to me.
Ew.
A lot of people have made that observation.
It's old school, isn't it?
It was it was amazing because nobody's that frank and honest anymore.
No.
It was amazing. But then the second most common theme I'm hearing is he's an arsehole, though.
Yeah, he's come out a couple of times, hasn't he, with different statements and he's probably said more than he should.
The weird thing is, like, so he's destroying Monty for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's honestly not that much more sophisticated than Monty's fat. Like, if you boil down what he's
Absolutely,
saying.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's like fat jokes. But peppered in amongst the 15 minutes is, but I love Monty. Monty's great. We love each other. I'm not sure Monty's going to love this podcast.
Not a chance. Monty doesn't like talking about his weight.
All Elkington talked about. Like, when he was talking about him digging into the custard cream Wentworth castle.
And nobody can beat me with that much custard.
To his wife, no man who eats that much custard is going to beat me. And then Monty with his 4 Big Mac containers. And Elkin's like, who eats 4 Big Macs? I mean, who does eat 4 Big Macs?
Well, I remember playing in the German Masters and we had to play 36 holes, I think it was, on the final day or maybe on the Saturday. And John Daly was playing just in front of me and after 18 holes, his manager had brought out 4 big bags of McDonald's. Right to the putting green. Hey man, anybody want a burger? He was giving out his McDonald's.
Great.
So, yeah.
What's Daly like? Don't you know him?
Yeah, really nice guy.
Is he?
Yeah, really. Yeah, really down to earth.
Seems pretty genuine.
Yeah, absolutely. Just
has his troubles, has his issues, but seems
like
a decent guy.
He's just messed up a little bit, you know.
Mm. What about him as a player?
Fantastic ball striker. Really, really good. Mm. Great short game. You know, really? Lovely touch around the greens. Really good. Last time I played with him, it was up in Portrush in the Irish Open.
Yeah, I remember seeing him, yeah.
2012.
Did you play with him, yeah?
Yeah, played with him in the first two rounds.
Right. So should he have won more? He have won more in his career? Like, does the
Possibly so. Yeah, he should have won a whole lot more.
Yeah,
because he was good enough.
Is it just the off the course stuff, the off the course distractions, or was there a weakness in his game?
No, off the course distractions. Yeah, obsessive compulsive nature that he had.
Mm.
You know, like even when he came back, he had one of the Scottish lads caddying for him, Magic. And Magic told a great story that he was caddying for him. They finished the round, got back into courtesy car, went back to the hotel, and he says to Magic, you know, you're going to go for a bite to eat?
Mm.
And Magic said, ah, yeah, I'll just get a bit of room service. And John says, no, come on up to my room, we get a bit of room service. So Magic's bringing in the bag, John's on the phone, and he starts ordering for himself, you know, sirloin steak, whatever, fries, and 15 Diet Cokes, and then shouts over to Magic, hey, Magic, do you want anything to drink?
God.
The 15 Diet Cokes were for John.
That's Peter Lorre-esque, No,
probably a little bit less than that, but obsessive.
It's a damn long backswing as well.
Oh, yeah.
That wouldn't be advisable to amateurs, would it, that long a backswing?
Definitely not.
We won't get the club back.
You wouldn't get the club back to, you know, square position, no. Yeah. But he was very flexible in his day,
right.
Like really flexible.
Mm.
And he had no issue getting the club all the way back over the top and keeping a decent angle coming down to it, you know.
Mm.
But,
yeah,
he was a talent, still is.
So let's move on then. A few bits going on. As for the match play, generally, Kevin Kisner wins 1.75 million, beats Matt Kuchar in the final.
Yeah.
I ran out of steam a bit with this tournament, as is the way. There's no way around it.
No.
No way around it.
No. Absolutely not. Nobody really cares about the final. Unless there was Tiger and Rory in the final, then people would have watched it. But I'd say ratings were way down.
I would have thought Sunday. So. Yeah. Kisner talks about how he's very safe with his money.
Yeah, I thought that was good, yeah.
He revels in it.
Doesn't know how long this is going to last.
I hoard that money like crazy, because they were asking him what's he going to spend it on, because I don't know when it's going to run out. I don't want it to run out, and I don't know how long I'm going to be able to make 10 footers. Quite likeable fella.
Seems to be, and seems to be very ordinary, as, you know, you'd walk past him pretty much, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
He's kind of back in the, he's in the background, which is a nice way to be, to be honest with you, as a professional golfer.
25th in the world.
Yeah. Hard to believe, because he's 5'10", is he?
Not a big man,
no,
yeah.
No, not a big man, and doesn't hit it miles out there either.
It's such a pity that that's how we're now talking about golf, that it's surprising that a 5'10" man could be in the top 25 in the world, isn't it?
Yes.
It's crazy.
Look at Luke Donald when he was world number one. It was going, like, how could this happen?
Mm. Is Rory the last of the great smallish men doing it out there?
I'd say he's the last of the non-bodybuilders, let's put it that way. Mm. Like, you know, anybody from Rory's era onwards now, no matter what height they are, they're all built, you know, really, really well, and they're working out in the gym and they're pumping iron. You don't see Kevin Kisner doesn't look like a guy who pumps out the iron.
No. Matt Kuchar doesn't either, to be fair. Though he's a big man, so he's got big levers.
Exactly, yeah.
Are we heading to a point where, just to preserve the integrity of lots of golf courses, that the pros are going to have to use different equipment to amateurs?
Yes, no doubt about it. A different golf ball, for sure.
Mm. Brandel Chamblee also talks about the driver, that there's the rebound in the driver.
Trampoline effect
has gone through the roof.
Yeah, look, I'm watching it all the time, and the stats really prove the fact that the ball travels that much further. You know, your average player now hits it nearly 300 yards.
Mm.
Your average player 10 years ago was 275-80 yards, you know. So it's that 20-yard gap.
Yeah.
And it pretty much makes most golf courses null and void.
Does it really? Because I've seen discussions about that saying, well, you know, people have said, well, St Andrews is being destroyed by technology. But I've seen other people argue very strongly that it hasn't. like of the great golf courses, you know, Merion is often talked about as an example of a golf course that they said was going to be too short, and then there was a brilliant US Open there. Like, of the great golf courses, which of them have been ruined by technology?
Well, I think you have to set up a golf course now not to be ruined by technology.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go through the setup of it. But, like, technology on a golf course, like, you know, we played it for every year. I played it for, whatever, 12, 13 years in a row. Cron in Cron-Concierge.
In Switzerland.
Yeah. Brilliant golf course. But, you know, guys could probably drive five greens in you know.
There's a certain novelty to that. It's kind of enjoyable sometimes watching those holes, but it can't become the norm.
No, not at all.
Chamblee was making the point. I was just listening to an interview on the No Laying Up Lads, like, from months ago, and he was saying that he's spoken to a lot of tour pros now, and they basically say there's no value in hitting the fairway. So he taught, you know, a story where he was playing with Jimmy Walker recently, and Jimmy Walker, it was with a really good four ball, lots of really good players, you know, lads shooting in the 60s. But Walker was the most errant off the tee. He was, you know, not hitting fairways. And they were kind of ribbing him as, you know, golf bander tends to go. And he turned around kind of 8-9 holes in and said, look, I've won a major. I'm the only major winner here. You don't need to hit fairways anymore. It's not important.
No.
Like, the game is not about fairways. You have to smash it as far as you can. And then you get up there and the rough is generally pretty good and you're fine.
Yeah. You have to find a way when you're that length, when you have that kind of length, you just find a way to get it on the green. And it's much easier to get it on the green out of, you know, a little bit of rough with a sand wedge than trying to hit it in close with a, you know, a 6-iron.
From the fairway, yeah.
From the fairway.
I don't like it, though.
No, I don't like it either. And majority of golf courses are set up that way, you know. They're set up for the kind of longer hitters. You know, the rough is not that heavy, but it's heavy enough if you're hitting a 6-iron out of it, but it's not that heavy if you're hitting a sand wedge out of it.
So if you come across a young prospect now who's 20 or whatever, and they ask you for a look at, have a look at my swing here, Peter, and they've got a really nice short game by your, you know, by tour standards, really nice short game, good irons, but they can only drive the ball max, you know, I know weather is everything, but say 270 in a standard tournament. Is there still a place for them?
A very small place.
Okay.
A very small place. Because I looked at it when I finished up playing, I could only compete in a number of golf courses.
Yeah.
You can't compete in the other ones. I couldn't compete in Abu Dhabi. Golf course was just too long, rough, too high.
Right.
And too many dog legs to carry.
Okay.
You know, the way the fairways were going. You just couldn't compete.
Mm.
Now, you might run a tournament close the odd time, you know, having a brilliant week of hitting the fairway, hitting it on the green and holding a good few putts.
Mm.
But in general, if you look at the odds, and there's a couple of Irish guys coming up now who are very good players, but just don't hit it far enough.
Right.
You know, and they're going to be kind of in that little pigeonhole where if they don't really succeed in those tournaments that they're going to be good at, or their game is you know, matched up with, then they're going to struggle.
Yeah, it's tough luck, kids.
Yeah.
Just to finish on the match play, Rory against Tiger was, I guess, the centrepiece.
Yeah, it just happened at the wrong time, didn't it, for the TV?
So Rory's had a top six finish in every tournament he's played this year. He's off the back of a win just last week. He's in brilliant form. And then it was hard to make sense of what he did on 16.
Yeah, look, maybe he just, you know, mental error or whatever, but... I don't know. Tiger just played very well. What's your viewpoint on it?
Well, I was looking at McIlroy. So he outdrives Tiger by massive distance. I think his drive is almost 380, 390. And I think he had, what, about 160, 170 in, and they were saying he was hitting a wedge.
Yeah.
I never liked that with McIlroy.
Wedge?
I love when I see McIlroy on the fairway hitting into a green and I see a sawn-off finish and he's taking something off a club.
Okay.
It's always good. Always good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, look, he's in amazing form and it's probably unfair to boil it down to one shot and I don't know enough about golf. But there is a trend with him where when he goes hard at those shots, he can flare them out right very often or turn them over.
Yeah.
Because I think he's using a bit more club rotation to get a bit more speed. He knows he has to go full bore.
Yeah, he just is too quick from the top, trying to hit it too hard. Mm. And then you either get inside it or you know what I mean, you flick it over.
I just would have loved him to float an 8-iron in there, get on the green, because he had the advantage.
He did have the advantage, but we all make mental errors, and they're very minor mental errors.
And look, then it got Messi out of the bunker, and suddenly it's like, whew.
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah, okay. I'm not worried about him.
No.
It's the last time we're going to see him before Augusta, Peter.
Yeah, I was impressed with Tiger, I have to admit.
Oh, were you?
I shot him down last week, and look,
what did you see? Because certainly in the pool stages, the group stages, by his own admission, he wasn't playing well. It was one match that he said was a terrible standard.
Yeah, but he's still... I had said last week, or 2 weeks ago, that he had lost that Tiger factor, mm-hmm. you know, against the players. Mm-hmm. And that's proved correct. Like, you know, Lucas Bergaard came out and beat him. Mm-hmm. But he still played exceptionally well.
Yeah.
Or played, you know, in his matches. He played strong match play matches.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, for his confidence, it was good that he turned out and beat Rory, you know, for his own sake. Mm. And it'll bode well for his major attempt in at the Masters.
And what chance do you give him at Augusta?
Still not.
Yeah, Grant. I figured as much.
Okay.
That's fine. So Donald Trump, this is phenomenal stuff. There's a new book out. Rick Riley is an award-winning former Sports Illustrated columnist. And he's played with Trump a few times. And he's written a book called Commander and Cheat, How Golf Explains Trump. He's gone around and talked to various people. So Brad Faxon has described some dubious Donald Trump drops. Philip Reed writes that Suzanne Peterson, a multiple winner on the LPGA Tour in January 2018, she told a Norwegian newspaper that the president cheats like hell. So Riley's spoken to various famous people. Samuel L. Jackson, big golfer.
Played with him in the Dunhill.
Jesus. The amount of crap you've spoken in here over the last couple of years and you held that in your back pocket.
Yeah, Samuel.
What?
Yeah.
Well, that's a tangent worth taking.
There you go.
Go on, tell us about Samuel L.
Really nice guy, mad about golf. Mm. Absolutely bonkers.
How did you swing
golf.
That?
No, he was playing, you know the way in the Dunhill you play in the,
yeah. Who was he playing with?
He was playing with, you know, you turned around pros, didn't you? You played with a couple.
Okay.
Trying to think, was he playing with Jamie Donaldson or someone like Jamie Donaldson or somebody like that?
Right.
If I can remember rightly.
Okay.
But, yeah.
So
yeah.
Is he a talker? Is he quiet? What kind of guy?
No, real quiet. Hard to get a couple of words out of.
Okay.
Yeah, really hard. Get a couple of words out of him.
Right.
So I tried to throw a few movies at him and, you know.
I'd say no one's tried that before.
No. No. You're right there.
What's his game like?
But, not great. Not great.
What kind of handicap would he
be? Yeah, he thinks he's better than he really is.
What would he be? Mid-handicapper?
I'd say he'd play off probably 11.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. I'm off 13.4, so I don't want to know what you say about my game if his is not great.
Well, I tried to describe your game quite some time
ago. So listeners out there, if depending on what your handicap is, even if you're off 11, that's how Peter Lawrie would describe your game.
Exactly.
And honestly, the look of disgust in his face needs to be seen.
Like where is our Facebook Live now when we want to...
He scrunched up his face and said, not great. 11?
11.
Fucking hell. So anyway... That actually upsets me. I'm going to really have to get better at golf soon. Samuel L. Jackson was quoted as saying that he clearly saw Trump hook a ball into a lake at Trump National in New Jersey, and then his caddy told him he had found it.
Wow.
Oscar De La Hoya also features, as does Alice Cooper, and they witnessed some of the fairway chicanery. And then this is the ultimate one. Not that we thought Trump was a good guy before this. The sportscaster Mike Tirico, I'm not too familiar with him. So this was before Trump was elected, and he was obviously playing with him. And the Post over in the States wrote that Tirico hit it the shot of his life, a 230-yard three-wood towards an elevated green he couldn't see, but he knew it was close, knew it was good. When he got to the putting green, however, Tirico's ball was nowhere to be seen. Instead, it was 50 feet left of the hole in a bunker. It made no sense. A few holes later, Trump's caddy caught up with him. Actually, this was after the round. And Tirico was quoted as saying, Trump's caddy came up to me and said, you know that shot you hit into the par 5? Yeah, it was about 10 feet from the hole. Trump threw it in the bunker. I watched him do it. Holy shit. I get like some dodgy drops.
Well,
you're finding your own ball on the trees.
Win at all costs.
Picking up someone else's ball.
No wonder Matt Kuchar voted for him.
Threw that into the bunker. Ah, the Donald.
Yeah.
Knows no bounds.
What about the Mickelson one? Have you heard that one?
No.
There was a tweet going around there recently that...
Is this legal? Has this been legaled, yeah?
Well, I saw it on Twitter. It was some podcast, wasn't it?
Okay.
So this guy goes up to him and starts giving him... he says he wants... He meets him at a wedding, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want my money back. He said, you and Tiger were... absolute disgrace.
Oh, yeah.
You heard this one,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, I think everyone's seen this. This is just this week. Yeah, the wedding, yeah.
This was brilliant. And Mickelson takes out $100 and says, hey, man, go fuck yourself.
He's like, I've won 90,000 of these.
Yeah.
I know. That's pretty funny.
Absolutely hilarious.
Graeme McDowell, we should touch on.
Yes, well done, Graeme. Fantastic. His career back, actually. He was struggling for invites and stuff like that. And
his first win since 2015, it was the Corrales Punta Cana Resort Club Championship. It's a PGA Tour event.
Yeah.
Not a great field, obviously.
No.
And it doesn't get him into Augusta. One of the very few PGA Tour wins that doesn't get you into Augusta. But it's his first win since 2015, and he's been in the doldrums for a long time.
But it gives him another 2 years on the main tour.
Yeah.
2 years without having to ask for invitations and all the rest, which he was doing.
Was he?
And he was saying it was proven difficult to try and, you know, build a schedule for himself. Mm. Now he can play whenever he wants. So it's good for him.
He won in fine fashion because he only won by a shot, and 17 was a tough par 3, and apparently he'd struggled in that hole all week and was practicing the shot needed for that par 3. Okay. And then he stood up on Sunday and hit a 6-iron to 5 feet, made birdie, that won him the tournament. It's a really good way to win.
There's one thing about Graeme McDowell. He has...
Balls.
Mm. Absolute balls.
Was he he'd be a few years younger than you, obviously. Did you know him coming up at all?
Kind of knew him when he came out. I think he won his first tournament, didn't he, in Sweden?
Right.
One of the first tournaments that he played in as a pro. Mm. We look back in the Ryder Cup and stuff like that. US Open in Pebble Beach.
Yeah. He's made the most of his career.
Oh, he has tons of it. Yeah.
He'd be a 270, 280 man, would he?
Not even. He wasn't a massive hitter at all, but just very good. But it just proves the fact that you can win at that, hitting at that distance, but eventually you will struggle, and he has been struggling.
Well, he's been the best putter in the world, and that doesn't always stay around because the margins are so fine. I see. Like, it's funny when you see a swing; it's really like it's a kind of a whippy thing.
Yes.
And he's tried, like you might give us the breakdown, but he's often put up videos where he's trying to take the club back less on the inside and get a, you know, straighter back through.
Yeah.
But like the downswing is just hasn't changed. It's been the same since he was 15.
Yeah. And funny enough, he swings it like that and doesn't draw the ball.
Does he not?
No, he fades it. And
it looks like he's coming from a mile on the inside.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I remember talking to his caddy, Kenboy, and I was saying, you know, how's he getting on? He says he can't even spell draw.
No.
Yeah.
How can you hit it that much? He's obviously nine it that much from the
just
inside.
Just holds it off.
Okay.
You know, and that's probably where he loses a little bit of distance, you know.
So he comes at it from the inside but holds the club off the whole way through. Almost Jordan Spieth in a way.
Yeah.
Right.
And look where Jordan is. Mm. See, Jordan is re-looking at his swing and changing around things.
I think he's gone down the hole, Jordan. He's gone down the black hole. You don't want to go down.
As I said to you, I think he just needs a bit of time off. You know?
Does that Graeme McDowell swing holding it off lead to very consistent shots, though?
Very straight shots.
Right.
Very straight shots.
Basically, he has no club rotation going on.
Very little.
Okay.
Yeah, very little. And that's why he was always good. He was always very straight hitter in the fairway on the greens. Yeah. You know? He didn't spray the ball around the place.
Is it like a parallel with Dustin Johnson? He almost holds the club and turns through?
Yeah, but with a lot less power.
Yes.
You know, Dustin is all about power. Mm. Like if he released it at all, he'd hit it over his left shoe. You know?
Mm.
Who else came into it like that? Álvaro Quirós was pretty similar.
Right.
You know, he held it off as well.
Did you hold it off now?
No, I tried to hit it as hard as I could. But
so you turn, would you feel you were trying to turn the right hand over the left hand?
Yeah, I always drew the ball and always sort of wanted to draw the ball.
Right.
Even though I was probably coached to fade it a little bit, but I always saw everything as a little draw.
Right, okay. Well, it's good for McDowell, won in brilliant fashion, and just takes a bit of pressure off him. Because I must say, with McDowell the last couple of years, as his business interests expand, and quite clearly he loves his family life, I had him down as somebody to retire early.
It certainly looked that way, yeah, it did. What age is he now? He's probably 42?
About that. He was about 30 when he won the US Open.
Right.
That was in 2010. So he might even be just going on 40.
Just going on 40.
Like, he's still a young man.
He's still very young.
But I just had him down as someone who might just say, do you know what? Yeah. Love my family.
Had enough of this.
Probably been clever with his money. Has his head screwed on. Build a business empire. But the hunger is still there. I was just looking ahead to Augusta, by the way, because the television stuff is fascinating. We won't get to this next week because obviously we'll be previewing the Masters in a big way or whatever. But I was doing a piece with Vincent Wall, our business correspondent here at News Talk, about the TV rights around Augusta, and it was just really interesting. So international broadcast rights are a separate beast. They sell to about 190 countries and make about 25 million. That's grand. Like, the money's not the issue for Augusta, but I hadn't realised to what extent the money is not an issue for them. CBS have been doing the Masters in the US since 1956, and it's always just a one-year rolling contract. And that's because, obviously, Augusta wants such control over things. But basically, I was trying to find out about the deal, and it seems it's shrouded in mystery. Neither CBS nor Augusta make any money out of this deal. It's like a break-even kind of thing. And there were industry insiders talking about just the American market, where they're far more used to pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And they were saying, for something like the Masters, you could pitch it at $100 for the weekend or for the week.
And you'd get it, no problem.
But they reckon they'd get 3 million buys. So that's 300 million.
Yeah.
Augusta are just passing up on 300 million.
Yeah, they don't care.
They just want it on CBS, and they want to control it.
Last year, did they go with that we could watch it live on streaming? What was it called?
The 11 Sports thing.
The 11 Sports thing.
No, that was USPGA.
USPGA, right.
Augusta wouldn't be seen dead near 11 Sports.
I would hope not.
Not dead.
Not dead.
ESPN have come on board in the last 10 years. They do some Thursday, Friday stuff. But it's still ostensibly a CBS production.
And then Sky take their coverage from them, do they?
Yeah, everyone sort of takes the feed. Well, CBS even take the feed from Augusta. They control everything.
Right.
So I was looking, 1998, Jackson Stevens, the chairman there, the media were getting increasingly annoyed that even in 1998 you couldn't see the front line. And so he comes out and he says, progress is slow. And the media were like, why? Progress is slow because we don't want it to happen, was his reply to the media. And it was only in 2002 that CBS were able to show the full 18 holes. 2002.
Hard to believe, isn't
it? It's insane.
That none of us ever saw the first, the second.
Yeah. And Jim Nance came on and said, to see the leaders from the first shot is going to be very special. The most syrupy of broadcasters. But I was looking through the media guidelines for the Masters.
Okay.
Obviously, we all know you can't say there's fans there. You have to call them patrons.
Patrons.
Yeah, or the gallery. But you're not allowed ever estimate the size of the gallery. I didn't realise this. So listen out for this in the coverage next week. You can't estimate the size of the gallery. You can't ever refer to the players' earnings. And you can't ever refer to the Masters prize money. Which is like a given in every other tournament. Like, money is such a big part of the coverage, but you never are allowed to do it at Augusta. And obviously there's no rough, there's only second cut.
Have you ever noticed, though, over the last few years, the US Tour have gone away from money?
Points.
They're all gone to points.
Yeah. It was a bit vulgar.
And Europe have eventually started to do the same thing.
Mm.
But Augusta is definitely, it's nearly impossible to find out how much you win for 20th place.
Yeah. There is a reason that Jim Nance is like the doyen. It is because he is so syrupy. Gary McCord famously 20 years ago was talking about the greens, and he said they've been given a bikini wax, they're so fast.
He got banned, didn't he, for a couple of years?
I had thought for a couple of years as well. He is still banned.
Wow.
He is still banned, Gary McCord.
Here's a good one for you, right? One of the Swedish players, Johan Edvards, qualified to play in the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
And he had one of the, Ian Duncan was caddying for him. Right, I used to call them the Koala Brothers because they used to travel around together.
Okay,
right?
Imagine what they called you and.
Well, who knows? Yeah, no, but he had another brother who caddied on tour, Duncan, Ian Duncan, I think Duncan and Duncan. Mm. Doesn't make a difference, but one of them caddied in sandals,
Right.
That's all he caddied in.
Yeah.
He didn't wear shoes. He wore sandals.
Yeah.
So he arrived at Augusta.
Uh-oh.
To caddy in sandals and was told, excuse me, sir, you're not allowed to wear them. Mm. And you must wear white runners. You can't wear any other colour. There can be no colour in your runners.
With those boiler suits,
it must be white.
Yeah. Some people really enjoy the tradition and the history and think it's great. And I enjoy a lot of those quirks. I can live with them. I think it's fine. I can see how other people look at it and say, this is everything that's wrong with golf. Totally. They make $8 million alone just from baseball caps.
Hard to believe. Mm. I believe it's very cheap to buy a burger there.
Had a look.
Yeah.
Coffee, $1.50. Isn't that beautiful? You can get this big, nice ham and cheese toasty, $2.50. I bought chips in the Aviva there the other night and they were...
Nasty?
They were nice, but they were like, could have been €5.
Yeah, but they have a lot of people to pay.
Oh, totally. But like Augusta could charge what they want and people would pay as well. Because in fairness, the tickets are expensive. Yes. I almost think that, honestly, if I was to guess, it's like the tickets stop what Augusta would term as the wrong people coming in.
Very much so, yeah.
And then once you're in there, it's like, well, look, you have money, we have money. We don't need to rip anyone off.
No.
That almost seems to be the attitude.
Might as well give it away for free.
You're rich enough to be here, so, you know. Yeah, that kind of seems to be the way. But, they're passing up on hundreds of millions of dollars of...
We need to do a podcast.
TV rights. Do a podcast from there. Yeah. I tried to get accreditation there about 8-9 years ago.
Yeah.
And they replied back saying, we have enough radio people, thank you.
Pretty good.
Yeah, so I don't know.
You should have tried your Virgin Media one.
I don't know how I swing that.
No?
I don't know. I wouldn't presume so. Like, you don't have TV rights, so who the hell are Virgin Media as far as they're concerned? Good. We'll get there one day.
Touch wood.
Yeah. So that's the TV rights side of things. Valero Texas Open on this week. Ricky Fowler is there as the favourite. Matt Kuchar is there, of course. Tony Finau is there. Billy Horschel. Jordan Spieth playing 20-1. Jordan Spieth. I'd steer clear. He's done an interview actually, I think this week, on No Laying Up, where he's talked about trying to get things back on track. So we'll see how he goes. Graeme McDowell is there as well. Like, McDowell obviously wants to go to Augusta. He also needs to get to the British Open.
Yes, that's his big one.
Yeah, that is a massive one for him. Yeah. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
And Europe are playing a tri-sanctioned event with the ladies and the seniors tour.
Yeah.
So I think Europe is European tourists. The proof is right there that it's struggling.
Yeah, because we were just chatting briefly before coming on air. I hadn't fully realised that was happening. And I'm curious to see how it works as a TV event. But regardless of that, or regardless of it being pitched as groundbreaking or innovative, your interpretation of it seems to be this is a sign that actually the European Tour is just struggling a bit. The health.
Yeah, they can't get the tournaments. They have 3 weeks off now around the Masters.
Really?
Yeah.
So the rank and file European Tour players sitting around for 3 weeks?
Yeah, it's a shocker.
In April?
Yeah. Well, it's worse than that. They sit around for 3 weeks in July as well. So if you're not in the majors, you don't play golf.
Wow.
They've had one there cancelled in the Shot Clock Challenge. You know that one over there?
Yeah.
That's gone.
Dear, oh dear.
It's...
That's very worrying.
Very much so, yeah.
Like, people are saying, the PGA Tour are going to swoop in and buy the European Tour at some stage, but I wonder how attractive a proposition that might be for the PGA Tour, I mean.
Well, depending on the cost, like anything.
Yeah.
And what do they get out of it?
That's what I mean.
Yeah. How many Americans are going to come play in Europe?
Well, how much appearance money do you have? That's what it would boil down to.
Yeah, and they don't have very much.
Unless they co-sanction a few events. Right, interesting.
Yeah.
We'll keep an eye on it. We'll chat next week. Next week's Augusta. Next week's the Masters. It's fantastic. It's good. It's beautiful.
Bring it on.
We'll talk then. Thanks a million for coming in.
Thank you.
Okay, cheers.
Cheers. Tell all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. Starter.